interest and passion are so important in being a productive human being and living up to your inherent capability. Have you ever seen a duck that tries to move across a pond at a fairly high rate of speed? Well, the waters on top are calm, relatively calm, which was my perceived behavior. But underneath, I was just paddling like hell. In whatever we do, discovering better ways of doing something, anything, creating a better bathtub, creating a better showering experience, creating a better way of communicating with the consumer. In whatever we do, discovering a better way to do it.
Welcome to What Unites Us, a podcast about building businesses meant to last. We're your hosts, Taylor Justice and Esther Farkas. We lead Unite Us, a technology company that connects health and social care.
We became curious about the way other leaders develop, innovate, inspire, and lead to drive change. We've invited an incredible lineup of visionaries to share their experiences, whether they created a new industry, turned an existing one on its head, or breathed new life into an old brand.
We're glad you're here. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor Justice, and welcome to the What Unites Us podcast.
And I'm Esther Farkas. I'm super excited to welcome Rachel Kohler, my friend, my mentor, former CEO of NowPow, and someone who's had a very long career as an investment banker, as a management consultant, founder of her own company, and as a very, very important part of her family's business. And we're just super excited to talk to you, hear all about that. You're someone whose experiences I really value and your advice, and I know our listeners will too. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
I was your mentor.
I have many mentors, Taylor, and you all offer different things.
Oh. Yes.
You offer things too.
Oh, ouch. Starting off spicy. Hey, welcome.
Thank you.
After that.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about growing up in a big family business and your childhood. Was it very different being in a family that is so business and product oriented? Just talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so grew up in Kohler, Wisconsin.
How'd they get that name?
Company town. Planned community, planned by the Olmsted brothers who planned Central Park here in New York City. And most people think it sounds fantastic to grow up with your name on the town, but it's actually not. It's really, really terrible. But I'll set that aside for another podcast. But was really fortunate to be born into a family of entrepreneurs, risk takers, and people who cared deeply about social and community responsibility. Yeah. I had some great role models. My dad, Herb Kohler, his sister, Ruth Kohler, who was equally successful in her own realms, which I always like to tout, and my mom, they just had these incredible work ethics and were super grounded in their values. We were not silver spoon kids. My mom made sure we bought our jeans at the local mall. And our vacations were more like going to a shack with no electricity or plumbing up in the Northwoods versus like Disneyland, and a shared like family credo. And our business is 150 years old. And what knits us all together is this belief in be bold, build to last, and create a better life for others. That's the backdrop or the context that I grew up in, and it's really helped me make those life choices and career chapters.
I don't think I realized how massive Kohler was, because once you identify the name and you start to see it everywhere. So as a kid growing up, when did you start to realize, oh man, this is really big? Was it early on? Was it like a conscious decision of like the family of like, this needs to be everywhere? How did you build those relationships where it just became like the brand within the sector?
Well, you know, I will reference the privately held status. So that is actually something that is very much a part of my dad's legacy. He made sure that this company was privately held for decades. And that required us to not be coupon clippers. Like, we reinvested 80% of the retained earnings of our company year after year after year. And that really allowed us to do things that other companies couldn't. And that allowed us to be bold and build to last. And so it really was about fueling the growth with just continuing to keep the capital flowing back into the business. And when we went to China in the 80s, he took the family along when he was negotiating joint ventures with the Chinese government. And the Chinese government was all around us trying to bring our business to the country. And that was really the moment of inflection that I recognized that, I was 16 at the time, mm-hmm. right? And when I was in college, I did 2 internships in China. And this is, again, in the early 80s. But it really is that kind of long-term thinking that a privately held company can do. And yet the fiscal disciplines that my dad employed year after year after year, and his predecessors did as well. Yeah. But you know that we ventured out into golf.
Oh, yeah.
So my dad got tired of plumbing after 40 years and then decided that he wanted to do something with the green spaces around our town and built these amazing golf courses. So in some areas, we're actually known more for the golf. But yeah, other businesses also added on. But I would say really it's that global footprint that has allowed us to create the scale of the business we have today.
Well, yeah. It's interesting too, like on the golf front, and we can stick there for a little bit. I am now obsessed.
Taylor's a golfer, in case that wasn't super clear from this exchange.
And we had the great fortune of hosting you too.
Yes.
Right.
So not only did you create this world golf destination now, mm-hmm. but a big piece of hosting the Ryder Cup mm-hmm. recently, which anybody who's a golf fan is like the event within professional golf, because it's the first time where these individual golfers are now a part of a team competing against the Europeans. And the event was, it was perfect weather, minus a little bit of rain one night, but the course is just gorgeous, like right there on the lake. Talk a little bit about that experience, because we talked a little bit about it too, of like the development of it, because Kohler is relatively flat.
Right.
Except for Whistling Straits.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that transformation.
Well, you know, part of my dad's management style was really leaning into paradox, which is this idea of two opposing forces that you're holding and managing the tension that's created between the two. But when they intersect, magic happens.
Yeah.
And that was what really happened with him and Pete Dye as they came together. And on the one hand, had this Lynx course in the back of their mind that they wanted to create, but by the same token, had the constraints of Wisconsin, right? Yeah. You know, and as they were trying to figure out how to do this, they put their heads together as my dad, who loved the outdoors and loved the Wisconsin landscape, and Pete Dye, who had seen every golf course in the world, came together to create this. But I think it took both of them and their collective experiences and visions to stand it up. I was so glad my dad lived to see the Ryder Cup be played. That was, I think, a huge moment.
Yeah, huge accomplishment as well. Okay, so obviously the Kohler business is very well known, but you've done other things in your career as well. Investment banker, consulting, entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Talk about the decision to maybe walk away from the family business and kind of chart your own path and your own direction.
Yeah, you know, my dad never made us go back to the family business. So after college, I knew that I love problem solving and I needed to really understand, how do you do this thing about be bold, build to last, and better life for others? Like, how do you actually actualize that? And so for me, I also had that sort of maverick sort of paradox in mind. He would always like to say, be a maverick, but never miss your bottom line. And which is really hard to do, right?
Paradox right there.
And I decided that I was going to really focus on the never miss your bottom line. So I took a job in investment banking after college, and I worked in the junk bond department on Wall Street in the 80s when it was really a wild ride. And I remember calling up my dad because I'd gotten an offer from the GE management training program, which for a manufacturing guy like my dad was the pinnacle of like jobs. And I said, well, no, I turned that down and I'm really going to go work in this junk bond department. And he was like, investment bankers have ruined corporate America. I can't believe you're doing it. I'm like, well, this is me being a maverick, Dad, right? Like, you know, you got to love it.
Is this what you wanted?
Right. And me learning about fiscal discipline and control. So I had these chapters, like I did that. I went back to business school at the University of Chicago. And then I really love operations and making things. Mm-hmm. So I went into Booz Allen and I did operations consulting for a few years. But kind of all of these things were with a view of going back to the family business at some point and bringing these experiences to bear. But I'm working in Booz Allen with customers that had really taken on too much junk bond debt. So they needed to reduce costs. And my dad called me up and he was like, I have the perfect job for you. I'm like, great. Tell me about it. And he said, well, it really is the only job and it's now or never. So this is your exploding offer. And I'm like, okay, dad, really? So I didn't have much choice really at that moment in time. But I came back because I really felt I had all these great other outside experiences that I could contribute. So yeah, it started a 20-year career. I ended up managing our high-end portfolio of companies. But after probably year 20 and turning 50, I really thought about what next and really wanted to be an entrepreneur in my own right. My dad had been an entrepreneur all those years and really made it something that I wanted to do on my own as well.
And was it your brother and your sister both work for Kohler and they still do. Was it important to your dad to have you all working for him or
you
for
know
the company?
He would say that he never made us do that or like made us come back. Yeah. But, you know, I think he loved the fact that we all did and really could not believe that I would choose to leave. I mean, seriously, I gave him a year's notice. And he, as it was coming to the end, he was like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, yes, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, initially, honestly, like the first year, he didn't speak to me after I left. Right. Like he was not happy. But, you know, I think once he saw what I was doing and how thrilled I was to be building a business on my own, I think he understood why I had chosen to have another chapter.
And what was that other chapter?
And what was that other chapter?
Is that how we met?
Yes. And that would be your biggest competitor, right? right. Yes. Yeah.
We like to say we don't have any competition anymore.
Anymore.
Right,
we'll get to that. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to put all these things together, but really focus more on bettering life for others. And so I had the great fortune of meeting my business partner, Dr. Stacy Lindau, at the University of Chicago. And together we created NowPow, the community referral platform that y'all bought. But then the pandemic hit. And as you know, it actually supercharged our businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And after 6 years, we really recognized we either had to grow fast to compete with the big players that were starting to sniff around our space or form up with another business. Mm-hmm. And Taylor, who is always charming, had a relationship with Stacy that he kept alive. And I'm like, why are you talking to that guy? Really? I mean,
he's a competitor.
Right. Stacy, really? So we were really trying to figure out what was next for us. And Taylor like calls her up and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, what did you say? Because
I don't know if I want to take that call.
Yes, that's what we thought you said. Uh-huh. Yeah. We're like, maybe she won't ask or maybe she'll just take it.
No, once we got over the initial like, okay, we hadn't really thought about them.
If it wasn't us, who were you thinking about?
Well, we thought of just continuing on for a while. We could have done that. That was probably a little bit more vulnerable.
Yeah.
We looked at some of the bigger healthcare IT companies, but we felt like we would honestly end up fighting for capital at the bottom of the rung as a small company, mm-hmm. and that sort of discarded that. There wasn't another competitor we saw that we actually could see ourselves forming with. So once we really looked at it more closely, we recognized that it was probably a pretty special union of two businesses.
When did you first think that? Because I don't think that was obviously your first thought.
No,
if I'm reading into why is he talking to this guy?
Well, and it wasn't just for our listeners because
it was Esther, wasn't it?
Yeah,
as soon as you met Esther.
But like when you enter this type of acquisition process, you can go a number of different ways, and so one of the things you can do is if you're a company that would like to be acquired, you can kind of put the word out and be like, hey, everybody, we're at this stage. Right. Who's interested? Come on in, like an auction. Mm-hmm. And then you get kind of the best price for your company typically. And you sometimes hire bankers to help you do that. But you guys weren't doing that. Mm-hmm. Just to end there. You were not doing that when we called you. So.
Well, it was actually when you guys came to Chicago. I think everything you did really made us feel that you were trying to build a relationship, learn about us in a very sincere way, and not just take us off the board, right? Not just take a competitor out of the market, that really a vision of 1+1 could equal 10, I guess. And we talked a lot about that. It was just like, oh, we kind of like these guys. And that we saw how complementary our businesses were.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing for us that ultimately was the deciding factor was that you also had a social mission orientation. Mm-hmm. And for the culture that we built and the people that worked with us, the Now Powers, that was a huge, huge part of the decision, that yeah. there was a real alignment in how we stood up our businesses and how we supported our customers and ultimately made a really hard decision. And my dad, who never sells anything, was like, you did what? And I said, you know, it was just it was the right thing to do. And yeah. I have no regrets about that.
Yeah. And we, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about a lot of logistics. Mm-hmm. And we also had a lot of laughs, which is not normal mm-hmm. for a negotiation. Yeah. But always at the front of it for you was people. Mm-hmm. That was always, is everybody going to fit into the culture? Are they going to be able to contribute? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to grow their careers with you yeah. all? Do they have a place on your team? And
but, you know, I would say the other thing that I was reflecting on recently is that you all live the Kohler family credo, too, which was be bold, build to last, and better life for others. And that really struck me. That, I think, is such a tie that binds us together.
Oh, I love that.
And in some ways, we're bolder than I had approached NowPow. And that, I think, is remarkable, is that I can see how all of the things I've done, all of the experiences and contexts I've had in my life have now really transcended into the relationship we have here.
I want to talk a little bit more about just the process of going through the merger of the companies, because I think a lot of people that are listening are from different sectors. Some people might not even know anything about mergers and acquisitions, but I think in the environment that we're in right now, you're going to start to see more consolidation of nonprofits joining together or other technologies coming together. Mm-hmm. But there's also that competitiveness mm-hmm. against others in the market. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people overshadow competitiveness mm-hmm. versus shared values. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about that process from the early days until we really got to know each other. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about like the aha moment, because you've kind of hit on it a little bit, like the shared values, these things. Mm-hmm.
Well, I made sure we were competitive to the very end. Like,
It was
that RFP and like who's right, whatever. So I am a competitor. And so that's in my nature. But it takes a lot for a founder and owners to come to the point of deciding to sell their business, right? And I think there's a humility around it, too, because you're trying to understand what's right for your customers, what's right for your associates, and what's right for you, too, at the end of the day. And, you know, I think I had been working 100-hour weeks for like 6 years, and I'm 59 at this point. So you can imagine, like, that's a lot at this point in my life. And yet there was never a day that I wasn't more energized than when I was at NowPow. It's that building, right? Mm-hmm. It's like building a business does create just adrenaline that you can't quite explain to somebody who hasn't done it. But, you know, I think we put all of those things together, kind of where we were in our at our stage in life, mm-hmm. wanting to do right by our communities and our customers. I think for Stacy and I, that was a huge, huge piece of this. And we have some odd dynamics in our space, which is sort of that land grab that was something we woke up to every day. And felt like together we were better for our customers and communities. So it was a hard decision, but y'all made it easier at the end of the day. And also, you know, the business the best. And we were still in a sort of a new-ish sector. And I kept saying to the bankers, like, nobody understands the value of this strategic merger or acquisition than me and you guys. Like, it's hard to explain why traditional multiples or other things weren't going to cut it for us. And that's why we ended up spending a lot of time on the phone with each other. But I really had great appreciation for Taylor's ability to really, I don't know, Taylor, you have an amazing ability to communicate that I so respect. And for somebody who is more of an introvert, I like, wow.
Well, I think going back to bringing the two organizations together and then folks that are listening too, where getting a deal done usually comes down to a couple things. Mm-hmm. There's like the business terms, but there's also like effectively communicating what you're doing. And then even if you're successful in that, which a lot of people aren't, then you have to communicate what's that value to everybody else. Because again, you have these competitive dynamics that go into play. And now you got to kind of unwind some of those. Yeah. Of like why it,
you know, really in a transaction, just closing is the only the beginning, right? Oh, yeah. And all of the hard work really happens after that. Mm-hmm. And that's something to impress on people is that it is a long journey to create the value for your investors, your customers, your communities. And the fact that you did it with such great planfulness and care and consideration, I think is really going to ultimately yield tremendous value.
But it's hard, to your point earlier, until you're in it
right.
and you're going through it, merging two cultures.
Right.
And I think we all shared the same values, but we right. still did things differently.
Right.
And so it took time, I think, for the teams to really understand that dynamic as well.
Right.
And we're still kind of going right. through it a little bit.
Right.
But I think one of the trends we're seeing in all of these conversations is about the long game. And at times, providing that context to your team is like, we know that we're going to go through these ups right. and downs, mm-hmm. these little road bumps along the way, but it's all going towards this longer vision.
Yeah.
And I think the way that the market and SDOH continues to mature, mm-hmm. I think everybody now is like, oh, this makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the future of social care, right? It's not something that this merger of these two companies that you're fully walking away from. It's always it's something that's like in your soul. But when you look at social care generally and just how it relates to healthcare, what do you think the big opportunities are moving forward?
Well, I just think our two companies really made this a national conversation, and mm-hmm. I'm so proud of that. I remember when we were just starting out and I would be actually in New York City pounding the pavement and I would call Stacey and I'm like, nobody understands what I'm talking about. Nobody's heard of the social term. Like, are you sure this is a thing? And to the point where Googling social determinants of health is like, you know, if you look at the analytics around it. And so I think the role our companies have played yeah. in ensuring people get connected effectively to the resources of their community is so huge. And obviously, we've seen that importance in the pandemic. But I see it now going beyond, you know, connecting healthcare to social care, right? It's providing a platform that entities can collaborate across large geographies to create more health and well-being for all of their residents, not just ones that are inside a health system.
Yeah.
I think it's just taking it to that broader level or construct. And I know you've been thinking about that for a long time with the different audiences that you've served. And you've built the technology in such a way that it has many different use cases, many different interventions, many different audiences. You know, I love disaster recovery. Stacey always mm-hmm. had that idea that this is a fundamental technology mm-hmm. that should be used in every state mm-hmm. to manage through disasters. And I think the work that you're doing in Florida is a great mm-hmm. indicator of that. So I see this just as a much larger stage of community collaboration than mm-hmm. just the original healthcare to social yeah. care messaging that we once did.
And you know a lot about generational companies. Yeah. Is this a generational company?
You know what? Of course it is.
Okay.
What did I say? Build to last, right? Be bold. You've done all of those things. But I think the fact that you've taken such care in assembling the assets that underpin it and the people and the platform that you've built, but also the fact that you thought about data from the very beginning as well. That's where a lot of companies stumble. They don't understand how critical that is in creating an enduring business.
I think yeah. what we're starting to see a lot, especially in your, I guess, non-traditional sectors where technology or innovation happens, especially in human and social services, yeah. you're starting to see more for-profit organizations yep. coming in because you see individuals that want to have that sense of yeah. purpose, but they still want to have that business acumen. But there's a lot of people, and you know this far too well, that maybe are in a nonprofit sector or another sector that don't trust for-profit yeah. organizations.
Yeah.
I don't care what your values are, what your mission, what you're trying to do. You're a for-profit, so you're inherently bad. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that shift? And I know you've had to deal with it, but how do you answer that?
Well, actually, when Stacey and I made the choice to be a for-profit company, it was very intentional with community backing, really, because they had seen a lot of nonprofits on the south and west side of Chicago kind of go in and out of funding. There's mm-hmm. very, very much a roller coaster in terms of the kind of services they can deliver. And that's really hard on community members. You can't necessarily rely on the constancy of those yeah. organizations. And we also felt that customers needed to connect up with us. We needed to create very intimate integrations so that we could be a fundamental part of their workflow. And to do that, I think they needed to trust that we had high security, that we had high quality technology, we had all of those things that normally go along with a for-profit company. And so the community was okay with it. I mean, the community was really like, yes, we want you to be a for-profit company. So for at least the South and West Side of Chicago, who's one of the poorest areas in the country, I think it was an important validation that you can create a for-profit company that still is about creating better life for customers and communities. And I wouldn't do it a different way. I mean, I only know how to run for-profit companies too. So I think that was a little bit of a constraint, but it also has disciplines in it that are really important as you're trying to build a business.
Yeah. So are you starting another business? Is it going to be a competitor?
You know what?
Has it another
called,
podcast?
It's called Pal Now.
Right. Well, united us.
Well, you know, I just love to build things and I love to build it from the ground up. You know, what I found when I went into startup world is so much of my business background translated.
Yeah.
Managing and navigating paradox, because startup world is like one giant paradox. Like to get credentializing customers, you need funding, and to get funding, you need credentializing customers. Yeah. Like how do you think about all of that? And it's one giant problem solving experience day after day after day. So, you know, for me, it's my happy place, but it doesn't need to be with the aspiration of becoming giant. You know, I think for me, it's just the process of building something. Mm-hmm. But I learned so much from working with young people and had the benefit of in a technology space. There's an inherently a skew towards youth. But I think I've shared that my eldest child is a climate, environment, and energy reporter and has been giving me sort of, I said, well, where are the big problems in that space that could be solved? And so that could be another pivot away from healthcare to a different sector.
Mm-hmm. Like climate change?
I don't know.
So the question we have for you, and we ask everyone, is when you think about longevity of an organization or a business, is it the brand or is it the people?
I say product or people, because I think even if you say it's the people, you can still have a fantastic brand. But for me, it's like the answer has changed over time. And so I have the benefit of 150 years like in Kohler. And, you know, I would say the first 125 years, it was very much the product. Because you could, you know, in an era when capital was king, you could create huge competitive advantages by being very capital intensive. You could create moats around your business that allowed you to build big and be bold. But then the information age happened. And what happened, you know, I think for all of us is that speed, agility, transparency all became much more relevant in how we conduct business. And that really changed it from the way you build longevity or enduring businesses is really, I think, about the talent at the end of the day. And they're the ones who are going to create the innovation, create the agility, create the new set of knowledge you're going to need in a nanosecond, like sooner than you think. That's what you all have done well, is you've really been incredibly thoughtful about the people that are part of this organization. And that creates enduring strength and competitiveness that I think a product, a moment in time, won't at this point.
Well, I want to thank you for participating on the podcast. You know, I think our joint organizations have created that national name, and over 72% of the market is now riding across our technologies. Woo-hoo! And helping people at the end of the day. But obviously sharing the experiences of us coming together, of your experience with Kohler, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Hey team, thanks for tuning in today. We want your feedback. Who should we talk to next? What questions should we ask? And what do you want to get out of this podcast? How can we get better?
Email us at podcast@uniteus.com. Let Taylor and I know what you think, and we'll see you next time.